You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Here we go, Locked On Jets podcast. It's Thursday, April 10th, 2019. This is your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. Great to have you with us today as we talk about the Jets. It is a mailbag Thursday here on our podcast, so let's jump into the questions. First question emailed to me by a listener named Luke. John, I'd like to know what your ideal trade down would be within some level of realism. Now, I have to start off with this disclaimer. I don't view the Giants personally as a big threat. The Jets never compete against them for a playoff spot. They play them once every 4 years. This is one of the years the Jets will play the Giants, but I've just never really been big on the whole rivalry with the Giants. Like, I think it's until these teams start competing head-to-head more frequently, until these teams start competing head-to-head with something on the line, the Giants are just not a team I get as worked up about as I do with New England or Miami, one of those teams. So I don't have a big problem with helping the Giants facilitate drafting a franchise quarterback, assuming the Jets get something really good in return. So with that in mind, and that, like, a lot of people view things differently, and I kind of feel like we'll see. I kind of feel like these two teams view it in those terms. We certainly know the Jets did last year when they apparently did not even call the Giants when they were looking to trade up. But to me, the best trade, this is not because it's the Giants. I'm just saying the fact it's the Giants would not deter me from making a deal like this. I think the Giants are the best partner because they have the 6th pick and they have the 17th pick. So you could potentially get two first rounders, and maybe you can get them to throw in a second round pick. But first of all, you're only moving from 3 to 6. So you're still staying near the top of the draft. You know, you're only moving down 3 slots. And then if you get an extra first rounder this year and a second round pick, that for me is the dream scenario, because essentially I think the ideal scenario for the Jets would be a early run on quarterbacks. You want, you know, Arizona to take Kyler Murray, as they're rumored to be doing. Then you want somebody to, you know, maybe trade up with San Francisco or, you know, somebody else early in the draft to take a quarterback. You essentially want 3 quarterbacks to go in the top 6. And this is the other part of the scenario, is that if you make this trade and 3 quarterbacks go before you, that means you can get Josh Allen. I'm assuming, we'll just say for the sake of argument, Josh Allen's the guy who falls to 6. So could you imagine that scenario where you trade down, you get extra picks to help stock your roster with young talent, and you get the guy you would have picked at 3 anyway? That, I mean, to me, that's the ideal scenario. To me, that's what you want. That's like the dream for the Jets, is if you could trade down, still stay high enough that where you could get a really good player, and then the player you would have picked at 3, who I'm assuming would be Josh Allen, falls to you at 6 anyway. And you actually even end up a little bit better because the contract's a little bit less. The contract's a little bit smaller. It's not a ton, and not that this would be the determining factor in making a trade, but you'd actually end up a little bit further ahead because the contract for the 6th overall pick is a little bit smaller than the contract for the 3rd overall pick. So to me, that's the dream scenario. Now, you know, if you don't want to help the Giants out, then that's probably not your dream scenario. But for me, it's not that I want to help the Giants out. It's just I don't view helping the Giants out as less attractive to helping another team, especially if the Jets benefit. You know, it's one of those deals that could be win-win. And I think of the trade the Jets made last year with the Colts, and yeah, there are not many deals in the NFL where I say both sides came out ahead in this one. You know, both sides really did well. There were trades where one side did well, and there are a lot of, you know, in the NFL, there are a lot of trades where nobody does well, where nobody makes out, nobody comes out a winner. Jets-Colts trade last year, you look at what the Colts got from the picks the Jets gave up, and you look at what the Jets got in Sam Darnold, I think that's a trade both sides have to be pretty happy with. So I think that's probably where my head would be, though. I think that I don't have a problem helping the Giants out if the Giants are going to help me out and give me the picks that I need. Give me some picks, you know, give me 2 first round picks and a second rounder. Get me back in the second round, early second rounder. And I think that's the way I'd like to go. If everything plays out correctly, if the Giants are willing to make that offer. Next question. You've mentioned the idea of taking a receiver in the 3rd round. Do you have any preferred receivers that you think will make it there? or a preferred style of receiver? Preferred style, no. I don't really feel passionately about what type of receiver you should take, because for me, it's just about hitting on these picks. The Jets have to do a better job drafting. You just have to do a better job hitting on picks and, you know, getting surplus value out of picks. So my the whole genesis of this plan, the whole genesis of this idea that the Jets, you know, should look, consider strongly taking a receiver in the third round, is the fact that, or not a fact, it's an opinion, my opinion that this is a deep receiver class. So in the third round this year, there are going to be guys who would normally go much higher in other draft classes, but the, you know, they're not third round caliber players. They're better than third round caliber players, but you can get them in the third round. And that's a way you can maybe raise your odds of really making sure you get your money's worth for that pick. Now, in terms of, you know, which players would I want, I think it's tough to say, because, you know, all of the draft analysts tend to be speak in unison when you're talking about the early picks, like the first round picks. But once you get to like day two of the draft, like there's not a lot of agreement. They tend to be all over the map. You know, even Todd McShay from ESPN just did a mock draft where he had Kelvin Harmon, the receiver from NC State, falling to the Jets, not with the with their second third round pick at 93. And I thought that was kind of crazy. I never thought that Kelvin Harmon would be a consideration. I'm not sure Kelvin Harmon will be there at 68 with the early third round pick, much less the late third round pick at 93. So, I mean, I don't really know who's going to be there. I mean, there are lots of receivers I like in this class, and that's my point is, you know, Arcega Whiteside from Stanford. He's, you know, a big target who, he's not just a big target, but I mean, he's a guy who can go up and win jump balls. I really like him. You know, the receiver who's probably the opposite of that would be Marquise Brown from Oklahoma. Now, assuming he's got some injury questions, so, you know, I'm assuming that his injury situation is going to be okay. I've seen some people project that I've seen him projected, you know, late first round. I've seen him projected in the third round. So if he falls to the third round, I mean, play small receiver, but big time playmaker. It's not so much a style that I want. Because those are two guys who are pretty opposite. You have maybe one of the biggest receivers in this draft class, and then you have one of the smallest receivers in this draft class. I think either one would be an excellent pick in the third round. It's not so much that I have, and listen, there are lots of receivers I like in this draft. So, you know, those are a couple of options. I don't know who's going to fall to the third. I guess for me, I don't know who's going to fall to the third round. It's just, I know, you know, one of those guys I mentioned may go in the second round. But somebody I like is going to be there in the third round, so I don't really have a preference as to which one. As long as I just feel like this is such a talented year at receiver that it would in some ways seem like a waste to not take advantage of that. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. Locked On Jets podcast. It's Mailbag Thursday here on the show. Our next question deals with NFL head coaches. Are true NFL head coaches dying out? Is Belichick the last of a dying breed? I understand Gase is nominally the head coach, but the Jets are really a two-headed monster with two coordinators. Rex and Bowles were also never true head coaches, just overpaid defensive coordinators. Go around the league and tell me who is a real head coach, not just a coordinator getting a bump in salary. I thought Tomlin, but it seems like he's kind of let the players take over. We're the Lombardi, Landry, Chuck Knoll of 2019. Well, I mean, we're talking Lombardi, Landry, Chuck Knoll, Bill Belichick. I mean, we're talking some of the greatest coaches to ever walk on the sidelines. So, I mean, those guys are not very common. I think that the days of where, you know, a coach knows everything about both sides of the ball, everything about it, every intricate detail of the system, are long gone. They've been gone for decades. Belichick is the exception. Again, he's maybe the greatest coach of the Super Bowl era. So in that sense, maybe. But I think that there's this perception out there that head coaches have become glorified coordinators. I think a lot of that is that when you have a guy like this especially applies to Sean McVay, because McVay seems to be the new trendy guy. I think that there's a perception that if a guy is like a real offensive whiz, that he's just a coordinator. And I'm not sure that perception is necessarily accurate, because, you know, you want to talk about a guy who looks like he could be the next great coach in the league. I mean, Sean McVay would probably fit that bill. And it's, yes, he does bring a lot to the table in terms of offensive acumen. But if you dig a little deeper, if you do some reading on him, do some studying on him, he's more than just like what he brings. Sean McVay is not a glorified offensive coordinator. Sean McVay brings a lot to the table. He's made good hires. for his assistants. I mean, one of the smartest. This was not like an arranged marriage, him and Wade Phillips. Like, he went to Wade Phillips before he got the Rams job and said, if I get a head coaching job, will you be my defensive coordinator? And that's part of, you know, nobody in any field has all the answers. So what you have to do, especially when you're in a management position, is bring in people who can help fill in your gaps, bring in people who can help complement your weaknesses, you know, make up for your weaknesses. So that's one of the smart things he did. He's hired good people around him. You also read about, you know, a lot of the stuff he's done with the Rams. I mean, he's done a lot to change that culture there. And I think that, you know, culture is kind of a nebulous term. It's something you don't appreciate until you have a situation like, you know, maybe like the Jacksonville Jaguars, where the team falls apart. You know, talent, don't get me wrong, talent's really important in the NFL. You cannot win without premium talent, but the talented team that underachieves is almost a cliche at this point. So you need a guy, you need a head coach, you need a guy who can communicate, you need a guy who can lead, and you need a guy who can, you know, mold the team together, hold people accountable. I mean, one of the things you read, if you read anything about McVay's leadership with the Rams, you read about the way he holds people accountable with that team, the way he's changed. I mean, he's changed the entire feeling around that team. It's not just about his offensive acumen. Look, having acumen on one side of the ball is really good. It's certainly something that can add to what you're doing. You know, being a cutting edge offensive coach, that's great. But the thing about the NFL is that the rest of the league copies schemes. You know, Bill Walsh, what he did with the 49ers was cutting edge back in the 1980s, but everybody else copied him. Everybody else incorporated what he did into the offense. So it's not, you know, being cutting edge maybe gives you an advantage for a couple of years, but over the long haul, teams are going to catch up. And you don't want, I think what you want to avoid, I don't think you would ever want a situation where you have like co-head coaches, because I don't think you'd want a situation where a team views itself as almost like two teams, like the offense and defense are separate teams. I think that could be a very negative, it can be a negative thing for, and now the 85 Bears are an exception because that, a lot of people viewed them as kind of like an offensive team and a defensive team, but that you can really tear a team apart doing something like that. And I think it's a real danger if you go to this, if you get into this mindset that your head coach is just a glorified coordinator. It's a very dangerous thing to get into. And I mean, there are plenty of teams that have just fallen apart under that model. I mean, I think back to 2011 when the owner of the Ravens was asked why he did not hire Rex Ryan as his head coach. And his words were actually ended up being very prophetic. And at the time, the Jets were coming off two very successful years with Rex. And there were questions, did the Ravens make the wrong choice hiring John Harbaugh, who's a guy who might fit the mold of the CEO, you know, the guy who's not just a coordinator, guy who actually oversees the whole team. And the owner of the Ravens said that, you know, said something to the effect that I was concerned about the idea that we'd be two separate teams because the defense has dominated for so long in Baltimore. I didn't want I did not want the locker room to feel like it was two separate teams. And it ended up being very prophetic if you watch the way Rex's tenure ended with the Jets. So I think, and I mean, right now, again, everybody's looking for the next McVay. And I'm going to read you something that Sean Payton, another guy who's a great offensive mind, had to say, a guy who's had a lot of success as an offensive mind. He recently touched on this issue. He talked about how everybody's looking for the next Sean McVay. And he's talked about how people say, I want Alvin Kamara. Well, you can't have him. You can go draft 10 more running backs and zero will be Alvin Kamara. And the same thing goes for Sean McVay. This is not a direct quote, but same thing goes for Sean McVay as a head coach. You can try and hire 10 guys and you'll never find the next McVay. So I see a lot of mistakes that are made in the process that I feel like this long in, we're excited to play those teams. We're excited to play the teams looking for the next McVay. He said, I'll read you his direct quote. I feel like I've got four or five coaches on my staff who are ready to be head coaches at some point. The thing can be disappointing, though, when you talk to someone and they give you the profile of a desired head coach, and then I'll say, well, you're not interested in the young Bill Belichick or a young Tony Dungy. They get pigeonholed into, because this is cyclical, right? This goes, and ultimately, you would say, if we did a little history, successful head coaches probably come from the East and West and North and South. They probably come with both color, and they probably come on offense and defense, and they're good leaders. They're great leaders. And so if you say, I just want one who coaches quarterbacks and they're on offense, well, then you're going to end up with a smaller pool, and you'll probably have less of a chance to be right, because already of eight hired, there's going to be three that survive 3 years. And that's a great point. It's not, you know, you don't just want a guy who's going to be on the offensive side of the ball. I keep hearing, I heard this all offseason. I heard this heading into the offseason. The idea that, you know, an offensive head coach was more important to have is a better idea than a defensive coach because it's an offensive league. Well, the rules favor the offense, but, you know, defensive, eventually things even out. And yeah, the rules may favor the offense, but, and the offense is, we're kind of in a cycle where offense is dominating the league, but, you know, the run pass options coming into vogue. But eventually defenses are going to figure out ways to neutralize the run pass option. And the run pass option, like the West Coast offense, like anything else, will remain part of the league, but it won't be as effective. It'll be something every team runs and every defense figures out a way to neutralize. So if you find the, if you find like a head coach who's from the defensive side of the ball who can be cutting edge, well, that's an advantage you have over other teams. And, you know, the other thing I've heard is, well, if you hire a defensive coach and you get your offensive coordinator could get hired by somebody else, and then you're out an offensive coordinator. Well, isn't that true of anything? You know, isn't that the goal? Isn't the goal that you want other teams to hire your people? You know, you want your role, you want to be such a good team that other teams sign your role players as free agents to be their stars. Other teams hire your assistant general managers and directors of scouting as their general managers, and teams hire your assistant coaches as head coaches. Isn't that what you want? I mean, isn't that, and it, like, as though it's like impossible to, if your head coach, if your offensive coordinator gets hired somewhere else as a head coach, it's impossible to find a new offensive coordinator, as though every quarterback in the league hasn't changed systems at some point, hasn't changed coaches at some point, offensive coordinator or head coach. Every good quarterback in the league hasn't done that. I mean, it's, I sometimes think these things just kind of, these ideas catch momentum and people don't think through how the way the league actually works. As though, like, the offensive coordinator is the most important person in your organization. You have a garbage organization if the offensive coordinator is the most important person. So I think that there's a lot, I don't agree with that thinking, and I think that that thinking is very prevalent. And I think that you look at the way teams, I think Sean Payton's right. You look at the way teams hire coaches, there's a big flaw in it. There are big flaws, and then I think there's big flaws in the way NFL teams think when they're looking to hire coaches. Next question, do you envision anyone wanting to trade up to the top three to get one of the projected top defenders, particularly a Super Bowl contender coming off a bad season like Green Bay, Atlanta, or Pittsburgh? You know, I think that you can never say. I would imagine there are 31 other teams in this league, and I guess, you know, Arizona and San Francisco are picking in front of the Jets, so cuts it to 29, but out of those 29, I mean, I'd have to imagine somebody would want to move up to three. I'd have to imagine. Now, you may not get, if you're looking for, like, the monster package, the just, like, incredible package full of, you know, an extra first-round pick, then multiple day two picks, you may not get that. But I'd have to imagine if the Jets want to recoup a second-round pick, there's probably going to be an opportunity. And you never know where it's going to happen. I mean, last year the Saints traded up for Davenport, a defensive player. They gave up a future one. So it certainly does happen. I mean, I would not be shocked if some team was looking to move up. The question is, you know, are you of the mindset that the Jets need to get the King's ransom to move down? Or if you're just looking for a fair package? I think if you're looking for the fair package, it's quite plausible that somebody's going to look to move up for a defender. I'm not sure anybody's going to give up, like, the monster package, the quarterback type package for a defensive player, but I think that if the Jets really want to move down, if the Jets really want to get a second-round pick this year at the very least, I would have to imagine, look, I can't say for sure, nobody can say for sure, I'd have to imagine somebody out there is going to be interested in getting this pick, though, moving up to three. Next question, do you support the idea of the Jets trading a third rounder and a day three pick to move up to the second round? I think that, look, it always depends on who's available. Like, if somebody really good falls and you're looking to get them, I mean, you can never say never. So I won't say never, but I just don't love the idea. And I don't love the principle of the Jets trading up this year, unless, like, they've made that monster deal, unless they've accumulated a bunch of, like, day two picks. Because I don't think this is the type of year where the Jets can afford a five-player draft class. The Jets need to restock this team with young talent. So I think the Jets need to add a lot of players. So you can never say never. And listen, there might just be a deal that's too, there might be a guy who's too good to pass up, or B, you know, somebody's saying, hey, send us the Saints third round pick and a seven and you can move into the second. Well, then, I mean, at some point the price just makes too much sense. So just in general, it would, my inclination would be to not do that, though. My inclination would be to not trade up this year, or at least I would only trade up after I've accumulated more picks by trading down, because the Jets just need to restock the cupboard with young talent this year. And our last question, Quinnen Williams versus Josh Allen. Got my Alabama Williamses mixed up. Quinnen Williams versus Josh Allen. Many seem to agree that Williams is the slightly better player, some calling him the clear second best talent on the board. Do you agree? Assuming both are there at three, who's the best player available in your view, and whom should the Jets take? I think that it's not an easy question, even if you're talking best player available, because what's your definition of best player available? I think right now, today, Quinnen Williams is the better player, but I think 5 years from now, it's quite plausible that Josh Allen is the better player because of the position he plays. He's at least a more valuable player because of the position he plays. Just in general, edge guys are more valuable than interior linemen. They produce, unless you're dealing with an Aaron Donald, they tend to produce more on the, you tend to get more production out of the edge than you do from an interior type guy. So, I mean, that's part of the thing that plays into the equation. So I'd be more inclined to take Allen. Even, you know, today he's probably not the better player. He has some developing to do, but I think, you know, his ceiling is much higher. I think by the end of the day, it's quite, by the end of their careers, it's quite plausible Allen's the better player. And I think, to me, this year is different from 2015. Back in 2015, the Jets were in kind of a similar spot where they had Leonard Williams in front of them. They could have also drafted Vic Beasley, who was an edge guy. But the thing was, like, I was not a big Vic Beasley fan. And to be honest, Vic Beasley had the one big year. But Vic Beasley's not that good. I feel like if Vic Beasley was with the Jets, we'd be complaining about what a disappointment he was outside of that 1 year. So I think that in that situation, Leonard Williams was the right pick. I think that this year, because Allen is such a good edge rusher prospect, he's probably the right pick. I think if Vic Beasley was a better player, he would have been the smarter pick back in 2015. But I think in that instance, Leonard Williams was just so much better than him that Leonard was the right pick. This year, I think because of the position Allen plays and because of his upside, he's probably the better pick, even though right now, if I had to win a game today, Quinnen Williams is probably the better player. But if I'm looking for, 10 years worth of production, I think ultimately you're going to probably get more out of Josh Allen, at least by my estimation. So it's a complex question. It's a complex issue to breakdown, but that's where my head is at. That's all for our show today. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you enjoy the show, subscribe, iTunes, Spotify. Leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. Have a great Thursday, everybody. We will be back tomorrow to close out the week.